This is Evolutionary Radio. This is your host, Trevor Caritzen. As always, we have Steve Smee in the house.
Yeah, are we in the evolutionary.org headquarters tonight?
We also got the Mason. Mason, how are you doing?
I'm good. Ready to go. And I've already previewed two topics. They look great. I'm interested to see the rest.
So the first topic, I'm going to start off with a skill testing question. What do you think has more genes, a human or a piece of fruit? Let's say an apple.
I'm going to go with apple.
What made you pick that, Steve?
Because that seems like the less obvious answer, so I went with apple. Okay.
So actually, you're right. A human has about 28 billion genes, whereas an apple has about 85 billion. Why do you think that is? Any guesses? Come on, guys. We're more sophisticated than a granny.
Yeah, because a fruit is a grows. What do you think, Matt?
Dude, we grow too.
Haven't you? Because there's more potential varieties of apples versus potential varieties of people. I don't know.
No, the reason why is that in mammals, the bacteria in our digestive tract accounts for about another 300 billion genes. So the amount of genes in your digestive flora actually outnumbers you 10 to 1. That's pretty interesting, hey?
Well, yeah. Lauren Lockman, actually, in his videos, he talks about bacteria in the body. So he talks about that a lot, and that's one of the things that makes us so interesting. But yeah, if you put an apple, it's different. It's just amazing how much bacteria is actually in our body.
It's pretty fascinating. And I really feel like in the next 20 to 30 years, we're going to be able to cure diseases through specific probiotics. I mean, like, we're just starting to realize like how much the bacteria in your body has to do with neurodegenerative diseases like Alzheimer's, things like cancer. Like it's really, really fascinating. So that's why digestive health is so important. And that's why we constantly talk about things like probiotic supplements on this show. It's really, really a fascinating topic. I've been eating a lot of sauerkraut lately. Steve and then Matt, what are some of your guys' favorite probiotic foods?
Yeah, I eat raw sauerkraut as well with my eggs. And I also, eat them with other stuff too. I like it, but it's one of those things where, a lot of people, they say they don't like it. So I think it's just a matter of, we're so addicted to sweet foods or something. So I think, something like that, I think you start enjoying it. I really like it. I like kombucha as well. But those, they're very expensive. So, if I do get one, I have one maybe once a week or something. I mean, they're like $4. So, it's kind of pricey.
One thing I just want to say with that fermented sauerkraut, like if you're buying a good quality sauerkraut at like a natural grocery store or anything like that, I had some clients who were eating the sauerkraut. And then, that liquid that's left, they were just pouring that down the drain and then recycling the glass jar it comes in. That liquid actually has more probiotics in it than the actual sauerkraut. So you don't want to throw that out. You want to drink it. That is like a health shot to the max. So anyone who's doing the sauerkraut, make sure you drink that liquid after. It'll kind of taste like apple cider vinegar. Steve, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, a lot of us, we don't have efficient bodies, so we need to be taking those probiotics every day. But if your body's functioning the way it should, do you need fermented products? The answer is no. But the problem is most people's bodies don't function properly, and we also are bombarded with antibiotics. How many times in our life have we taken antibiotics? I can remember as a kid, I never took antibiotics, but then as an adult, every time you go to the doctor or a dentist, they'll always write you a prescription for antibiotics. And it's like, you know, we abuse a shit out of antibiotics and we wonder why we're so fucked up, our gut flora health.
I bet you I haven't taken antibiotics since I was probably 12 years old. I can't even remember the last time, to be honest. As far as probiotics, so two things. One, with foods, I'm not picky at all. So I love sauerkraut. I don't mind anything like that at all. And the second thing is I've never taken anything specifically for that purpose. Never taken a probiotic supplement. Never bought food specifically for probiotics, which might come across kind of weird considering the industry that we talk about and that we, you know, work in every day. But it's just something I've never felt I needed it, but it was never a priority. So I'm looking forward to, you know, hearing a bit more about it and, you know, maybe something I'll have to try out and add into my routine.
It comes to that age-old question, what is essential versus what is optimal? It's like, is a probiotic supplement essential? I would say no, but there's a big difference between something being necessary and what's optimal. You know, even if you're not using antibiotics, I still would use a good quality probiotic supplement. It's just going to help your digestive system. It's going to prevent getting sick. Like the bacteria in your digestive flora are actually your first line of defense of your immune system. It's going to help your body assimilate food. I really think it's a good supplement to take. Steve, do you want to introduce our next two topics?
Yeah, why not? So the next topic I wanted to kind of get into is fasting. I had a couple fasting questions that came on. And the problem, you know, with fasting in the fitness industry is I feel like you have two sides of the aisle. You've got the hippie types who don't lift weights, who aren't athletes. You know, they'll do yoga, they'll do stuff like that, who fast. And then you have the other end of the aisle. You have meatheads who know how to stick steroids up their ass, who eat like, you know, 2 to 3 times their, you know, grams of protein per day per body weight in pounds. And they know, you know, they just know how to eat. They eat every 2 hours, whatever. They eat a pre-workout meal. They have a stimulant. They have a post-workout meal, blah, blah, blah. And those are people that are out there who are giving fasting advice. And then on one side of the aisle, you got the meatheads who never fasted even for like 3 hours in their life. And they think that they're capable of giving advice on the subject. So it's just it's frustrating for a lot of people because you have the both sides out. So we had a couple questions that came in. The first question was, a nurse friend said that intermittent fasting was bad because it hurts the kidneys. So, you know, what do you guys think about that? I mean, how does that make any sense? I'm just curious.
So your kidneys are two organs in your body that basically regulate your body's fluid and electrolytes. That's their main job. Their main job is fluid retention, making sure that, you know, you're staying properly hydrated. And then they also regulate electrolytes. So I don't really see how fasting could affect your kidneys. Especially if you're like, cause like when you fast, you can still drink water. So no, I really can't see the link there at all. Did she give a reason to why it's bad for your kidneys?
No, but I think people have to remember that just because someone's a nurse or an EMT or a doctor doesn't mean they know anything about like nutrition. I have a doctor friend who actually attributes the way I look to me taking amino acids. He actually said, he's like, Steve, you know, you look so good. Like, you must be taking amino acids every day. So I look at him. I think he's like joking, but then I'm like, I'm like, yeah, that's what it is. Amino acids, dude. It's not that I'm, you know, busting my ass in the weight room and eating in a deficit every day. And, you know, I've been training since I was 15, but yeah, it's amino acids. So, you know, you have to understand doctors are the least athletic and least healthy of any profession out there. If you go to a golf course or a tennis court or at a gym, anyone who's a doctor, they usually look like shit, you know, and that's not by accident. So it's very important, again, to separate the bullshit from the truth. Matt, what do you think? And I'll get into the second question that came in. Matt, are you there? We can't hear you.
Matt, you're on mute. Okay, screw Matt. Go to the next question.
Matt, can you hear us? So the second question, Matt's having some microphone issues. So the second one was another question, and this came in from a meathead. This is a typical meathead question. He says that you will have zero glycogen stores when you fast, so your training will suffer. And I thought that was kind of interesting because when I was doing my prolonged fast for 19 days, I was working out every day and I had the best workouts ever. And if you look back at human history or look at your cat, for example, your cat actually wakes up from a nap, is hungry, and it goes outside and it hunts for food. It kills a rat or a squirrel, eats it, then comes back inside and goes to sleep. So this idea that you're supposed to eat, then exercise, is actually reversed. You're actually supposed to search for food while in a fasted state. Then after you're done, then you should eat. If you look at human history, that's what we've always done. That was our motivation for finding food. So I just think that's kind of funny. But that, it goes back to the whole meathead thing where meatheads think that, you know, you're supposed to have a pre-workout, you're supposed to take stimulants and all this shit. And, you know, I used to be that way, Trevor. You know, I used to be the type of person who I couldn't work out unless I had carbs in my system. But the more you actually train fasted, the more easier it becomes. And now, like this morning, I went and did legs, didn't have anything beforehand, nothing. So I fasted for 9 or 10 hours because I woke up this morning. I'd been sleeping for eight. I slept 8 hours, woke up 2 hours later, went to the gym. So 10 hours straight, no food, went to the gym, no problem. So this fly, you know, this, again, we go back to this idea that, you know, the meathead mentality of I have to eat a pre-workout meal. You don't. What do you guys think?
You know, one thing I learned from fasting was how good workouts can be when you train in a fasted state. So one thing I've applied now, you know, on a regular day when I'm actually not fasting at all, is I don't eat probably within 4 hours of training. And I feel so much better. And what I was finding before I ever started any type of fasting or experimented at all was that, you know, I'd eat my pre-workout meal an hour and a half, say 2 hours maybe before training. And after working out, I'd always want to get something in, even if it was something small, a few eggs, a protein shake, something. And I couldn't. I was so full, you know, from the food I ate before. I drank so much water during the workout, you know, I just busted my ass. I'd get home and my stomach would just be like, no, you are not eating. So what I do now when I'm not fasting is I train that way, you know, after not eating for about 4 hours. Then when I get home, I'm in good shape where I'm able to get a small meal in. So I've been able to utilize that and I found that a lot better. I don't add anything in like BCAAs or any stimulants or anything like that. Training, you know, water's good enough, you know, during the workout. I don't find I need anything else, you know, really for the energy.
Steve, I'm going to say two things and you can introduce our next topic. So you have two primary central nervous systems in your body. You have the sympathetic and the parasympathetic, and they're nicknamed the fight or flight or the rest and digest. So what you guys are saying and what you guys have noticed anecdotally is scientifically 100% true. So if your body is digesting food, that rest and digest sympathetic nervous system is kicking in. That's why, you know, if you eat a big turkey dinner, you want to have a nap. You know, your body wants to digest all that food. It's very, very taxing on the body, the whole digestive process. On the other hand, what you guys are noticing, if there's no food in your stomach, your adrenaline gets pumped out, your body, that's the fight or flight response. So what you guys are saying is 100% true. You don't want to be working out with anything in your stomach because you want that blood in your muscles. You don't want the blood in your stomach digesting your food. This is something I always preach to clients. If you want to eat a pre-workout meal, eat it a good 90 minutes before your workout so that it's cleared your stomach. And before your workout, food choice is pivotal. You want to pick very, very easy digesting foods. Like today, for example, what I had before my workout, I had 5 egg whites, a cup of oatmeal, and a piece of fruit. Very, very light on my stomach. You know, you don't want to be eating like a massive steak or anything like that. You know, you like egg whites with maybe some oatmeal and some fruit. You don't even need to have a protein source. You know, 90 minutes before your workout, you could have like a vegan protein bar, something like that. You know, I really like oatmeal and fruit before my workout. It just doesn't cause any digestive issues for me. You could have some, maybe like a can of tuna, some rice, then maybe some fruit, something like that. You want something really easily digesting before your workout. Glycogen, whoever submitted this question, I don't think he knows what glycogen is. Basically, glycogen is stored carbohydrate. The whole point of glycogen is to be used when your blood sugar levels are low. So basically, your body stores excess carbohydrates as glycogen. So if you eat a meal and you don't need all those carbohydrates at that instant, your body will store the excess carbs as glycogen. That's basically your backup energy source. So when your blood sugar levels go low because you haven't eaten, your body releases a hormone called glucagogue, which breaks the glycogen apart and releases the glucose or the carbs into your bloodstream to be used as energy. So by him saying by fasting, you're not going to have any glycogen. Well, no, you store your glycogen levels before you fast. And then when fasting, your body taps into those glycogen levels. That's exactly what glycogen is for. It's for when you're fasting or when you haven't eaten for periods of time, your body can access those stored carbohydrates and use them for energy.
Yeah, I heard Dave Palumbo say in one of his videos, he's like, your body doesn't have any protein to tap if you're fasting. And I just had to shake.
Protein to tap? What is
yeah,
that?
Yeah, he said that. But I think it's kind of ironic, a man who has the bubble gut named after him actually says that you need protein just to work out. You need that protein to work out. I just think that's kind of, you know, hypocritical. But it goes back to my first point, guys, that I was saying. If you've never done it before, you know, I really wish you wouldn't, like, mislead people and, like, give bad advice on it. And on the flip side, if you're, like, one of those hippie types who just fast and do yoga and don't lift weights, same thing. You know, don't tell someone like me who actually lifts weights and fasts, you know, something or another. I think both sides are, you know, not people you should be listening to. And you shouldn't be listening to nurses who probably smoke cigarettes and drink every night, because that's pretty common in that industry. So just be careful who you listen to on this stuff, guys. You know, feel free to message me if you need more help on that subject, but it's something I see so much misinformation about. It kind of frustrates me. So the next topic actually is perfect because it segues into accurate calorie calculator or calculations. And this is something that people fuck up all the time. And I'll just say this on it, and I'll let you guys chime in next. But let's say you're getting a chicken breast. It's 3 or 4 ounces, okay? It's roughly, 200 to 300 calories, okay? Plain. But if you are counting your calories and you think that getting chicken that's fried in oil or butter, or you add condiments to it, like barbecue sauce or any, you know, any type of condiment, if you actually think that it's still, just because online when you Google how many calories is a 4-ounce chicken breast, if you think that that's an accurate number, then you're fucking up. And that's probably why you're not losing weight. So you're, that 250 calorie chicken breast can easily turn into 500 calorie chicken breast. And if you eat two of those a day, now you're already 500 over what you think you are. So when you're calculating this stuff, you really have to account for not just the actual whole food, but you have to account for the butter, the oil, the sauces, and all that other shit you're adding. What do you guys have to say on this?
Matt, you go first.
Yeah, I think there's a few steps that you need to take if you're – like, especially if you're – really trying to get things, you know, locked in and you're still trying to learn your body and how you respond. I think the most accurate way is to weigh and measure everything. It's tedious, but it will be accurate if you do that. And it'll take you a while. Eventually you won't need to weigh out, you know, 4 ounces of chicken. You can eye it pretty easily. So I think that's kind of the first step. I think the second step after that is to use an app like, you know, MyFitnessPal or one of those. There's so many of them. You just got to be careful with those, because if you scan something, you know, you're going to get probably 200 options of what it is. You know, like take a fruit, for example, take strawberries, you know, it's going to tell you, you know, one link is going to say that a cup of strawberries is 20 calories. Another one's going to say it's 80. You know, and if you keep adding those up, you're going to end up being way off. So you really got to be careful that you're selecting the right options when you use an app like that. But I think over time, I mean, Trevor, you can probably, you've been doing this for so long, you know, meticulously, you can probably eye anything, you know, that you eat every day. And I think eventually when you, you know, you stick to the same good, clean, whole foods, you learn, you know, where you don't have to measure every little thing. But if you're starting off, measuring, weighing is probably the best thing you could do.
Okay, so I'm going to say two things, and then Matt, you can introduce our next two topics. So I see people on two sides of the fence. There's kind of people who are like, oh, I don't need to weigh my food. I can just eyeball it. And those people generally don't understand what serving sizes are. We are bastardized by a society where you go to a steakhouse, you order a steak, some rice, and a baked potato or whatever, the rice they give you, that's not one cup of rice. That's like 2.5 or 3 cups of rice. But the average person, just because they're accustomed to that, they assume that's a cup of rice. So when you weigh your food, it really teaches you portion sizes. Generally speaking, most people really underestimate how small a portion of fats or carbs are. A cup of rice is not a lot of rice. A tablespoon of peanut butter is not a lot of tablespoon, is not a lot of peanut butter. So I really recommend everyone buy a food scale, and at least for a week, just weigh your food, and it'll really teach you. It'll be a real eye-opener experience for you. A food scale is not expensive. You can go to Walmart. It'll be like $20. So, I mean, I understand people aren't going to want to weigh their food for the rest of their life, but even if you just do it for a couple days, it'll be a real eye-opener experience for you. So that's the one side of the fence. Then I see the other side of the fence where people, they get obsessed. Like they have to weigh everything and they're freaking out that they ate 150 grams of cucumber instead of 140 grams. You know, like you have to remember big picture about all this stuff. Food is going to have about a 20% variance based on the growing season. Just like humans, every human is different. Every chicken breast is slightly different. You know, one chicken breast is going to be slightly higher than fat than the other one. Ground beef from the supermarket 1 week will be slightly higher in protein than the other week. Like there's about a 20% variance in food. So don't get obsessed about this stuff. Remember big picture. You know, it's like, are you going to count the 5 calories in toothpaste? So remember balance, remember big picture, but also I really do encourage buying a food scale. I think that's something everyone should have in their pantry and learn portion sizes. Matt, do you want to introduce our next two topics?
Yeah, this first one, this is something that's really been driving me nuts lately. So I wanted to, you know, let the three of us talk about it and really put some thought into it. Is there's a big difference between somebody that wants to get cut and somebody that wants to lose weight. And so many times on the forums, we see posts and they say, hey guys, what do you recommend for a cutting cycle? And we kind of go through everything. And then eventually as it goes on, we find out that buddy's, you know, 5'6", 220 pounds and, you know, 30% body fat. So I think it's important to know that you don't run a cutting cycle to lose fat. That's in a roundabout way you do, but it's so much different than fat loss. So take Steve, for example. Steve's been cutting like crazy over the past year and a bit. And I mean, I think, Steve, I think you're down to like 8% body fat now, which is awesome. So a really nice time to run a cutting cycle would be, hey, I'm 10% body fat and I really want to get to 8. You know, what can you recommend? What can I run? And you really set it up that way. That's a far cry from, hey, guys, you know, I've let myself go. I got to lose a good 40, 50 pounds. Help me lose weight. So there's a huge difference in those two things. And it's so important, you know, for health reasons, for everything else, that you be honest with yourself about what you need to do. You know, if you do need to lose a ton of weight, there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, just go outside and look around, look at the people you see. You know, this is just the world we live in. If that's the case, then, you know, there's tons of people that can give you good advice and help you lose that weight first. And then you can get into, you know, maybe running compounds or something else. But, you know, steroids aren't the right thing to get into. And I know we've talked about steroids don't burn fat. That's not their primary use. But I think it's just the language that we've been used to with everybody saying, I want to cut, is kind of being substituted instead of using the words, I want to lose weight. So I don't know, Steve, you're kind of the steroid guy. I'm sure you get this question multiple times a day. What do you think about that?
Yeah, we really do, guys. I mean, we see this every day on the forums. You know, let me explain. The thing is, like, a lot of these guys, they're overweight. They have a belly on them, and they want to run steroids because they see pictures of guys, you know, either transformations, you know, a lot of Photoshop going on. But you see all these transformations, 12-week transformations or 8-week transformation, and they think that they can copy that. But the thing is, those people, you know, a lot of times they Photoshop the stuff, but also those people, they already looked like that before they got out of shape and they went back. So they were able to quickly, you know, it's like body memory. They were able to quickly cut off the stuff, but it wasn't from the steroids. It was from a really strict diet. It's from a lot of exercise, busting their ass. So, but we see that a lot. These guys ask this and they fail. You know, they'll hop on a cutting cycle, quote unquote, you know, the trend, the Winstrol, the Masteron, you know, those dry compounds, the ones that don't aromatize into estrogen, and they think that they're going to cut. But what ends up happening is if you've got a belly on you and you cut, you use dry compounds like Winstrol or T-Bol or Anavar or Masteron, things that are dry, then you're just going to dry up. But you're not going to be able to see any cuts because your muscles, your cuts are covered up by fat. So it's like this, it's like the person who uses the ab machine at your gym who's overweight. They can sit there and they can use the ab machine every fucking day, but they're never going to get abs. They're going to grow abs, but you're never going to be able to see them because it's covered with fat. So you got to lose your fat. And the way you lose your fat is through diet. You know, eat less and move more. And you really have to be in a deficit every day to cut down that fat. So I would tell you, you know, it's a waste of time to use steroids. Save the steroids until you cut down first. Then you can use the steroids. But I mean, in my experience, I've never cut body fat from using steroids. Never in my life. I've always bulked from using steroids. They increase my appetite. Some of them don't increase my appetite, but most do. They cause me to gain muscle and mass very quickly. They cause me to gain strength very quickly. So I've never experienced actually cutting up body fat from steroids. So in my view, they're not really optimal for that. They're not fat burners.
Yeah, like I said, I think the key is just being honest with yourself. You know, it's if you really want to get the best results and you want to get the proper advice, come on the forums and ask your question, but tell us what your real stats are. Tell us what your goals really are, and we can help you. You know, that's what we're on there for. So be careful the words that you use. If you're trying to lose weight, say you're trying to lose fat. Say you fucked up. It's fine. Don't say that you're trying to run a cutting cycle. You know, big difference. So,
in fact, using steroids at a high body fat percentage can actually do more harm than good, because the higher your body fat, the more testosterone is going to aromatize into estrogen. So if you run a steroid cycle at a very high percentage of body fat, you're at huge risk for developing estrogen side effects like gyno. Matt, do you want to introduce our next topic?
Yeah, it seems like SARMs are being discussed a lot again. I'm not sure why. They just seem to be peaking all of a sudden. So I there's been a lot of people asking, you know, what's your favorite bulking or cutting cycle? So I thought maybe we could each give, you know, an example of something that we'd recommend. I'm sure they'll be similar. There's not a ton of different ones out there, but I got a couple here. So my bulking cycle, this would be my favorite. I'd have Nutriball at 25 milligrams per day, and that would be in there definitely to get the appetite boost. It'll definitely help with healing and, you know, help with your body's own growth hormone production, but I would run it for the appetite. And then I'm kind of torn. I'd either choose LGD at 10 milligrams per day or RAD 140, same dose. If I had to pick, I'd probably pick the LGD, but I think both are really good options there. And that would be, you know, that would be like your bulking compound. That's the one that's going to help you with, you know, adding the size. That's one of the more anabolic SARMs and, you know, one of the more suppressive SARMs as well. And I'd run Carterin in there, 20 milligrams per day. And in that case, you know, yes, Carterin does help with fat loss and endurance, but it really helps power you in the gym too. You have that clean energy. And I think that's very important on any type of cycle that you're running. A simple PCT for that cycle is going to be, you know, just running a really good natural testosterone booster like HC Generate ES. A bottle of that, you run that for 4 weeks, that's going to be great, and you should recover just fine, no problem. So that's my bulking. My cutting cycle,
Matt,
again, I would run
one thing.
Yep.
You can't keep calling it HC Generate. You have to start calling it N2 Generate. It's not
hard. Old habits, buddy.
I know. But basically what happened is, so, like, credit card merchants are really, really cracking down. So because the product that was called HC Generate, people were associating it with the peptide HCG, it got renamed to N2 Generate. So Matt, just make sure you're calling it N2 Generate, because it's not HC Generate. It's N2 Generate.
But it is sold on Amazon though as HC Generate. And the bottles themselves do say HC Generate when they get sent out, but it's just on N2BM's website, because their processor, Amazon's processor, is okay with HC Generate, but N2BM's processor isn't. So it's kind of weird.
Yeah, it's funny. They really do seem to be cracking down on that stuff lately. So no, that is a good point to bring it up. So I'll move to my cutting cycle then. Again, like I said, I'd have Carterin in there because, you know, you're going to get the fat loss benefits. You're going to get the endurance benefits. You're obviously going to want to be doing a little bit more cardio when you're on a cutting cycle. So it fits perfect. It's probably one of my top three performance enhancing drugs out of any category of all time. I love it. Then I'd have osterin in there at 25 milligrams per day. And that's going to be more for muscle preservation, kind of like a TRT dose of test would be. You know, you're not running it to bulk up, but you're running it to help you keep muscle while you're eating in a deficit, because that's going to be the key, right? You're going to be wanting to eat in a deficit. And then I'd have S4. So this is basically your typical triple stack. 50 milligrams per day is good for most people. Personally, I don't really get the vision side effects at 50. I've gone up to 75 and I did get them, and it bothered me. So I ended up going back down. Everything went back to normal. And I'd run that. You get a little muscle hardening. You get a little strength. It's just a nice one to have in there. And my post-cycle therapy would be the exact same thing for either cycle. So I think I just wanted to show the versatility and you know, get us to give what our favorite cycles are. So whoever wants to go next.
Steve, you go and then I'll finish up.
I honestly, you know, just like to, if I'm cutting, I eat less food. If I'm bulking, I eat more food. I mean, it really doesn't matter. Like, you know, when it comes to steroid use, if I was going to be cutting from steroids, I'd probably run like a little Primo or a little, maybe EQ, you know, maybe some EQ. But Primo is really nice because Primo doesn't affect my appetite at all. You know, so I'll run a little Primo and maybe some T-Bowl as well. T-Bowl doesn't seem to affect my appetite. So if I was cutting, I'd do that, but I'd be in a calorie deficit. And the steroids would just help maintain muscle mass in that case. You know, so it's not so much, you know, that I'm using the steroids to do the work, but it's more that I'm using, you know, the steroids for that. When it comes to SARMs, the best SARMs bulky and cutting stacks, you know, let me just say Nutrabol, crazy appetite. If you want appetite and you're a skinny guy and you're not capable of eating very much and you get satiated very quickly, Nutrabol is great. I mean, that shit drives me crazy. It makes me so fucking hungry. And the nice thing about Nutrabol, even if you're a younger guy, like, you know, like Trevor's age or something, I usually wouldn't tell you guys to run performance enhancing drugs yet because you guys are too young, but Nutrabol is actually not suppressive. So Nutrabol is one of the safest things you could be using, and it would not suppress you and it would boost your appetite. So I would look into that if you're looking to bulk, because I'm a big believer, like I said, and eating more food if you're looking to bulk and eating less food if you're looking to cut.
Okay, so I'm going to clear up a couple things because this is something we get a lot of questions on. So the SARMs, Cardarin, SR9009, and Nutrabol are sold as SARMs, but they're technically not SARMs. They do not affect testosterone production or HPTA in any way. So if you're using those three SARMs, you do not need to run a post-cycle therapy after because they do not affect natural testosterone production. Every other SARM does affect natural testosterone production. For a mini PCT after your SARM cycle, you're definitely going to want to use a good quality natural testosterone booster. And then there's some people argue you should also use like a low dose of Clomid. Some people say it's not needed. I'm kind of on the fence here. I think that if, you know, you're a young guy, your natural testosterone booster is going to bounce back pretty quick. You don't need to use a SARM like Clomid. You can just use a good quality natural testosterone booster. If you're running like quite a few SARMs, you're an older guy, you know, adding maybe like 25 milligrams of Clomid per day for 4 weeks into your mini PCT with a good quality natural testosterone booster, it wouldn't hurt. I don't know if I would say it's necessary, but that's an option as well. So again, Cardarin, SR9009, Nutrabol do not affect HPTA or natural testosterone production in any way. After a SARM cycle, if you're using the other SARMs such as Osterin, S4, LGD, RAD140, you are going to need to run a PCT. You're going to need to use a good quality natural testosterone booster, And then you could add in a low dosage of Clomid, like 25 milligrams per day for 4 weeks. If you're looking for SARMs, SARMs1.com sponsors this podcast. You can use the code TREVOR5 to save 5% on your order. If you're looking for a good natural testosterone booster, you can head to NeedToBuildMuscle.com. Check out the product N2Generate, and the code TREVOR10 will save you 10% there. So our last topic is estrogen and libido. So estrogen is a hormone that you really don't want high and you really don't want low. Some estrogen is needed for muscle building and some estrogen is needed for normal sexual function and libido. That being said, I see a lot of guys who are scared to use an aromatase inhibitor with their cycle because they think, you know, like crushing their estrogen is automatically going to kill their libido. It's not that easy, and it's pretty hard to crush your estrogen with aromicin. So if you're using the AI aromicin like we all recommend, you would really have to try to crush your estrogen levels. Like you'd have to be taking like 10 pills per day. Like if you're using 12.5 milligrams every other day, which is the general recommended dosage, you're not going to crush your estrogen. I feel like a lot of guys try to blame all their libido problems on hormones when there's so much more to libido. You know, a lot of guys who say, oh, I must have low testosterone, my libido sucks. Well, you ask them what their diet looks like and their diet's crap. You ask them how much they're sleeping per night. They're sleeping 4 or 5 hours. You know, they've got tons of stress. They drink alcohol. You know what I mean? Like there's so many other factors involved. Matt, what are your thoughts on this? And then we'll let Steve finish up the show.
Yeah, it's always tricky for me with estrogen because the side effects of high estrogen and low estrogen are very, very, very similar. So like Trevor just said, you really want to have it, you know, balanced. You want it in the middle somewhere. Some guys like it a little bit lower, some like it a little bit higher, but you do need to have some for normal function as a male. Really, the only way to know is if you're using steroids and that, you need to get blood work. Because you got to have that dose right. You don't want to screw things up. I've seen so many times guys jump to conclusions and they say, you know, my libido's down, so I think I crashed my estrogen. When really their estrogen's high. So then they stop taking their AI or they lower the dose, sending the estrogen even higher, and it just compounds the effects. So, you know, libido, it is so complex. I mean, you see it all the time in relationships, right? You have that honeymoon period in the beginning where you're like banging 3 times a day. Then all of a sudden, 5 years later, you're hoping for it. Nothing's changed, right? Like most people, your testosterone hasn't gone down that much just to blame that. You're not having estrogen problems. You just get used to it. It's the same thing over and over again. So the interest isn't there. That's part of your libido. There's so many things that are part of it. So really to just blame estrogen is not the best thing. It's got to come down to if you're using steroids, you have to get blood work. And when you do it a bunch of times over a period of time, you will know what dose you need. You'll know how sensitive you are to estrogen. And, you know, Trevor gave you a dose, right? 12.5 milligrams aromacin every other day, 10 milligrams, depending on, you know, the product you have. That's just an estimate, guys. That's just a standard dose that works for most people. But everybody's different. You know, some guys need an AI on TRT. Some guys don't. Some guys don't need to run an AI on a, you know, 500 milligram testosterone cycle. Most of us do. So that's really the only way to know. If not, then you're just guessing and you're just going by side effects.
Matt, everyone's gonna need to run an AI at 500 milligrams of test per week. Some guys don't need an AI on TRT. Yeah, I agree with you. But if they're running like an actual cycle, they're going to need an AI.
I think coming home to a nagging wife or girlfriend who just like bitches and tells you how horrible her day was and shit, that's the biggest dick killer you could have. So it's like, you know,
that and kids.
Or, you know, you come home and the wife's like, little Timmy is sick. Can you take him to the doctor tomorrow morning? Or, you know, something, something of that nature, like hitting you with your, oh, the HOA sent us a letter that the grass is brown. We have to spend $1,000 to replace the sod in our yard, something like that. Getting hit with that when you come home, that's a big dick killer. And, you know, I would think that it'd be hard to, you know, want to fuck someone who brings you trouble every day like that. But here's the thing with estrogen. What I've noticed, you know, looking at people's blood work over the years and my own blood work, is high androgens in your body. Like if you're running a lot of, you know, hormones like testosterone, tren, anadrol, very androgenic compounds, and high estrogen together actually will boost your libido, you know, all things being equal. But the normal guy who sits in mom's basement and is on the computer all day playing video games and who eats pizza and chicken wings and crap all day and drinks soda, he's going to have high estrogen and low testosterone, low androgens. So in that case, that's a libido killer. So someone like that, like Trevor said earlier, you know, that is someone who's really has a poor lifestyle. So look at your lifestyle. That is one of the things that you need to look at. And then high androgens and low estrogen can definitely kill your libido. Low estrogen can also cause depression and stuff like that. But again, the guys are correct in that, you know, you run an AI, Romisen, do not run Letro. I know some gurus on YouTube and tell guys, oh, they need to run Letro on cycle. Letro is so powerful that it can definitely fuck your libido up because it crashes your estrogen so quickly and so powerfully. So stick with Aromacin, nice, gentle, mild AI, and it's a suicide AI. So you're not going to get estrogen rebound when you come off. I mean, it's as simple as that, guys. I mean, you know, it's no reason to stress out over it or think it's complicated because it's not.
Great, great topic to finish up our show because it's 1 week from Valentine's Day. I love Steve's term, dick killer, but it's true. I mean, lifestyle factors have a huge, huge impact on being a dick killer. You can have perfect testosterone, perfect estrogen, but if you come home to an unhappy household, your libido is not going to be where it should be. So another great episode. Thank you guys for all the questions. Please keep them coming. For your host, Trevor Kuritzen, for my co-host, Steve Smee, and for my second co-host, Matt, also known as Masonic Bodybuilder on the evolutionary.org and elitefitness.com forums. It's been another episode of Evolutionary Radio. Live your life, look good doing it. Thanks for listening.
Thank you.